So we're continuing our study of Sefer Shoftim, and we are in the middle, towards the end, of Perek Aleph. We're up to Pasuk Yotes. And what we had been reading about were some of the conquests of the tribe of Yehuda and Shimon. And we had mentioned that it sounds like this is, after telling us about some of the conquests that they were trying to do after Yoshua passed away, meaning as Sefer Shoftim is beginning, for whatever reason, Shmuel HaNavi, who's the author of Sefer Shoftim, writing it from a historical perspective, goes back in time and lets us know about some of their other successful conquests. In Pasuk Yotes, we hear a little bit about, again, since we're recalling it from before, why there was, or at least were there inhabitants of Canaan who were left over. So Pasuk Yotes, Vayhi Hashem es Yehuda. Vayhi Hashem es Yehuda, Hashem was with Yehuda. Vayoresh es Ahar. And he was able, the tribe of Yehuda was able to drive out the inhabitants of the mountains. Ki lo lahorish es Yoshve Emek. But it's in contrast with an inability to drive out the inhabitants of the Emek of the valley. Ki rechev barzel lohem. The Pasuk gives what sounds like to be a physical excuse for why the inhabitants of the Emek of the valley were more powerful and why they were unable to be conquered. Ki rechev barzel lohem. They had iron chariots. The Mitzudos Sion, in his definition, he says that they were, it had to do with their soldiers. He uses a phrase, chazakim kebarzel, that their soldiers were as strong as iron. We know even nowadays, right? The lahavdil, there's the race that involves running, biking, and swimming. They call it the iron. I guess they're gonna have to probably change it to iron person soon, but. The iron is considered to be a symbol of strength, even back in the times of Tanakh. Again, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this makes it seem very fit that it's Hashem who's kind of deeming this, that at the same time that we're going to see the tribes, and basically the first part of today's shiur is going to be almost taking a certain type of an accounting of the various shvatim who, like Yehuda, leave over some of the inhabitants. There seems to be an element of the divine here in that it says, Vayhi Hashem es Yehuda. Hashem is with Yehuda when he is driving out the inhabitants of the mountain. And yet what about the Emek? Where is Hashem in that? So the Radak makes note and mentions an idea that there could be some element of testing the people. That from Hashem's perspective, they should have driven everyone out. Why does from Hashem's perspective, he allow inhabitants of Canaan to stay? It can act as a test, which unfortunately, we're going to see that the Jewish people are not going to pass in terms of being influenced by their neighbors. But it had to have come from Hashem allowing them to be tested, and Hashem wants Klal Yisrael, just like each individual, to succeed. But there's this delicate balance of them not conquering, and what role did Hashem play in that? Pasuk Chaf. Vayinu leKalev es Chevron. Kalev was given the city of Chevron. Kasher dibir Moshe as Moshe had spoken. Vayorish misham eshlosha b'nei Anak. And Kalev was able to drive out the three children, the three sons of the giant, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Ves hayivusi yoshev Yerushalayim lo horishu b'nei Binyamin. All of a sudden we shift. We shift out of Yehuda, and we shift it to another tribe. And we'll see it, we're not going to have a paragraph break necessarily before each of the tribes. Some of them will be combined together. And here we see Binyamin to a certain extent being combined with Yehuda. On the one hand, we can also take note that we all understand why Yehuda is chosen first. Why was Yehuda chosen first to discuss? Well, we said that was actually that came from the Urim and Tumim, that came from the communication with the Kohen. It was mi yala tchila, who should go up first? And then the answer was Yehuda yala. So, and Shimon, we mentioned Shimon is kind of very much tied to Yehuda for the reasons that we discussed. But as we're going to go through all the other tribes, why is Binyamin mentioned first? So there's a sefer that's a modern sefer. I'll even hold it up on Zoom. It's called the Big Day Sheish, and it's very nice to be mentioning this sefer in New Rochelle because it's written by Mr. Ernie Bachhoffer's son, Rabbi Yosef Gabriel Bachhoffer, so Edna's stepson. I picked it up, kind of just be honest, just randomly. I had a question on some of the later psukim that we're going to read, and I couldn't find anything anywhere, and he had a beautiful answer. So that opened me up, so now, you know, I'm going to make reference. So he has a theory as to why Binyamin was chosen first, because we're going to, we have to fast forward, that there are going to be, and we made reference to it in the first introductory shiur, that there is going to be two major tragic stories that happen towards the end of the Sefer, and kind of in a negative way put a capstone on the entire period of the Shoftim. And one of those is going to be with the tribe of Binyamin. And when you think about the negative influence that Binyamin is going to have among them, and they must have been influenced by, because as this pasuk is going to hint towards, they did not get rid of all of the inhabitants of Canaan. So this something, you know, in a tragic way, poetic about starting with the tribe of Binyamin, and that the seeds of destruction in terms of some of the spiritual, and even unfortunately for the tribe of Binyamin, it turned into physical destruction, was kind of planted from the very beginning. So there is a practical reason why you would mention Binyamin, particularly, meaning mention Binyamin with Yehuda, particularly in the way that we do, because this pasuk, we'll go back to the beginning of it, is all about Yerushalayim. And until now, we mentioned Yerushalayim. We mentioned Yerushalayim in the context of Yehuda. And it sounds like from Yehoshua, Psukim and Yehoshua, and Psukim that we read here, it would, right, if you go back to Pasuk Ches just for a minute, it was Vayilachamu v'nei Yehuda b'Yerushalayim v'yilkaduasa. The children of Yehuda waged war against Yerushalayim, and they conquered it. So, first of all, it sounds like they conquered it. Secondly, it definitely doesn't sound like it's Binyamin's job. So, these are the questions, and we need to put it together. So, as the Eshay Yevusi, so we're reading Pasuk Chaf Aleph, the Eshay Yevusi Yoshev Yerushalayim. There were people from the nation of Yevusi, the Yevusim. They lived in Yerushalayim. Lo horishu b'nei Binyamin, and the b'nei Binyamin did not drive them out. Vayeshev hayevusi as b'nei Binyamin b'Yerushalayim, and the Yevusi continued to dwell with the children of Binyamin in Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh, until today. Ad hayom hazeh, and it's actually it's on this pasuk that the Radak mentions an idea that we've been circling back to. He quotes what we have. He says it's Lefi HaKabbalah, but we know it to be the Gemara in Bava Basra that we quoted, that Shmuel is the one writing it. So when it says that the Yevusim are present in Yerushalayim Ad Yom Hazeh, it means till the time period of Shmuel. Because it's, right, we know that eventually we call Yerushalayim has many nicknames. One of them is Ir David. David is the one who conquers Yerushalayim. He only conquers Yerushalayim after Shmuel is no longer alive. Around Perichav Hey and Sefer Shmuel Aleph, that's where Shmuel passes away. And David, while he's been anointed as king, is not yet acting as king. Shaul is still king all the way through to the end of Shmuel Aleph. And then Shmuel Beis is all about David's time actually acting as king. We call it Shmuel Beis, and Chazal refer to the whole thing as Shmuel, even though Shmuel wasn't able to write the whole Sefer. So Ad Hayom Hazeh means until the days of Shmuel, the Yevusim were present in Yerushalayim. How do we kind of put it together that Yerushalayim, so Yerushalayim, there are various parts of Yerushalayim, and again, this is considered to be the old part, old Yerushalayim. Most, most of the city, or at least a good portion of the city, was in the land of Yehuda, and that was conquered by Yehuda. There was a section that was within the tribe of Binyamin. That section was not properly conquered. The Yebusim stay in that section, and they stay there for hundreds of year period. There was a certain, there was a fortress that the Yebusim lived in, which eventually, you know, David is able to conquer. But here, the pasuk goes out of its way to express it in a different way. Right, it says on the one hand, Lohorishu v'nei Binyamin. So the Yevusim are living there, and the v'nei Binyamin were not able to drive them away. But then we hear, Vayeshev ha-Yevusim es v'nei Binyamin Yerushalayim. It sounds like they're dwelling together. When you dwell together, so, you know, when you dwell together, you're affected by where you dwell. People all over the world try to select, right? You can pick, to some extent, you can pick your neighbors. Obviously, you can't pick, you know, after you move in, someone. But to a certain extent, what type of community, what type of place? So, Vayeshev Hayivusi in B'nai Binyamin. So, how did their living together start, and how does it end? So, we don't, obviously, in a puzzle like this, you're not going to have the exact details. But already the Nabi is choosing to describe them that they're like living together. And once you're living together, one can influence the other. And yes, the B'nai Binyamin could be an influence upon the Yevusim, but unfortunately the Yevusim can also be an influence on the B'nai Binyamin, which we're going to see. And there could be, you know, there are different theories for why the tribes did not conquer. Why did they not conquer everything else? Why did they go ahead and leave things over? And one of the theories may have been that they did not need the land at the time. Right? If you think about numbers, because we're going to go through almost the majority of the tribes, and then we'll try to figure out, you could even try to pay attention, which tribes we don't mention, and hopefully we'll discuss some of the significance of that. But if you think about the numbers, we know that when the Jews came in at the end of the desert, they had a similar counting to when they started the 40 years in the desert. The counting is pretty close. It was 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60. And when you add in the women, the lady population, the children population, and above the age of 60 population, so maybe you want to times that by 4 or by 5. That's the basic number. So you think that the Jews are coming in with 3 million people. Nowadays, in the land of Israel, there are 9 million people, and they still have not settled the entire land. There's still plenty of places. And when you think about the community, right, the 8 million people that are citizens, or 9 million that are citizens of the land of Israel, that doesn't necessarily include Gaza. That doesn't necessarily include the non-citizens. So we see that the country that exists now has 9 million people, which is probably 3 times what it was then. So you could see that maybe that people said to themselves, we don't have to conquer all of the land right now. We need places for all of us to live, and they did that. But then they stopped. And they stopped thinking, when we need to conquer more, we'll conquer more, and almost extending a certain kindness to the inhabitants of Canaan. Yeah?
If they needed it, would the other tribes have helped Benjamin?
Would the tribes come to the...
Benjamin couldn't do it themselves. Would the other tribes be helping them?
So the question is, would the other tribes help in a situation? We could venture to assume that it would be possible. We're seeing Yehuda and Shimon link up. We're soon going to see, in just a few psukim, Menashe and Ephraim link up. Now, Menashe and Ephraim share this common bond of being Bnei Yosef. You know, the question is, you know, when the tribes are, you know, just getting started, when you're still in Sefer Bereishis, I guess at the tail end of Sefer Bereishis, so we could understand that Menashe and Ephraim are a unit. How much of a unit were they, you know, hundreds of years later when they've developed as standalone tribes? The way the Tanakh views them, they view them as still, I think we even have, I think we may have the phrase of Bnei Yosef here. I don't remember. We'll see. But they seem to link up. It's definitely a possibility. Yehoshua is the one, and we'll make reference to this in the beginning of Perek Beis, as a recollection type of pasuk. Yehoshua disbanded the united army, and from here till the time, I think we'll see, Shoftim will gather tribes together and bring armed forces together. But I don't know if we'll ever see a Shofet that got everybody, meaning that got representation from all the tribes, until fast forward to say for Shmuel with Shaul, in his one of his first acts of king, is he's able to actually reunite the army. So it could very well be that the tribes were out of a notion of kindness, they were allowing the inhabitants of Canaan. The problem is that kindness is obviously a beautiful character trait. Olam chesed yibaneh. Hashem built this world on kindness. But kindness has to be viewed through what Hashem considers to be kindness. And that the command was to drive out all the inhabitants of Canaan, regardless of whether you need the land right now or not, with the divine vision that this land had to be for the Jewish people, and that the influences would be quite negative. Again, specifically in this time of Avodah Zarah, which is always hard for us to appreciate. So here we have it right here, the next pasuk. Pasuk Chav Beis. Vaya'alu Beis Yosef. Right, so we shifted, we've done Yehuda, we did Binyamin. All of a sudden, Vaya'alu Beis Yosef, the house of Yosef. Who is the house of Yosef? So the house of Yosef is Menashe and Ephraim together. Menashe and Ephraim together, that makes up the base Yosef. And so they're working together. Gamhem Beis El. They're going towards Beis El. Vashem Imam, Hashem was with them. That same similar language that we had in Pasuk Yud Tes of Hashem being with Yehuda, Hashem is with them. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayasuru Beis Yosef Beveis El. So they latur, right? Latur, Vayasuru, that's the language we have, the Metsudos Tzion reminds us. We have it from Parsha Shlach, when the spies were sent Lasur Esa'aretz. Happens to be when you don't read it with a saf and you read it with a taf, latur, it translates to the word tur, T-O-U-R, it works. I don't think it's actually related, but to look out. So they sent some spies to look out the city of Beit El. Vishem ha'ir lefanim Luz. In the earlier times, this city was called Luz, which we'll circle back to that name in just a few psukim. So this was one of their projects that they had to work on, was conquering Beis El. Pasuk Chav Dalet. Vayiru hashomrim ish yotze min ha'ir. The shomrim here is more not like necessarily the guard, but the lookout guard. The Metsudas David defines it as a lookout to kind of, they were trying to, this city of Luz, so the Mefarshim explain, why was it called Luz? Luz is also the name of a type of nut. And a nut can be totally encased by its shell. Right, sometimes it's hard to. You need a nutcracker. That's always the classic example on when you're teaching about muksa on Shabbos. So when you teach what a hammer is called a kli shemalachto le'iser. It's a kli, a vessel that's normally used for a prohibited act, but you're allowed to use it when you need its place. So if a hammer was sitting on your dining room chair and you need to sit down for Friday night dinner, you could pick up the hammer. Or if you need it for its mutter purpose. What's a hammer mutter for? So the Rebbe always says, oh, cracking a nut. Now, whoever cracks a nut with a hammer, okay, if you didn't have the nutcracker. So it could refer to the fact that the city wasn't able to be penetrated. Another approach in the Mefarshim is that there was the entrance to the city was protected by hazelnut trees, by some type of nut tree. But so Vayira Shomrim in Pasuk Chaf Dalet, these Shomrim in the Sudas David says these were lookouts. They were trying to find someone leaving the city so they could then interrogate him or her to see how could they actually get into the city? How could they be successful at entering? So Vayira Shomrim ish yotze min ha'ir. So they saw one man going out of the city. Vayomru lo, they said to him, Har'enu na es mevo ha'ir. Show us the Mevo. The Mevo Ha'ir is the Mevo Ha'ir. The Mevo Ha'ir is the entranceway to the city. What's a way, right? The Metsudos Tzion says, Mevo is a language of Bia, of coming in, of entering. How can we get into the city? V'asinu imcha chasad. And they make a proposition. They say that if you get us into the city, we'll be kind to you. Maybe it's even reminiscent of Rachav, right? The two spies that come to Yericho when the conquest is supposed to begin. So there is a concept of, right, she helps them and then they're good to her. Here, I believe there she actually asked for it. She was proactive. Here, they're making a part, meaning the base Yosef, the household of Yosef, the Menashe and Ephraim's, they are making a part of the deal. You tell us how to get into the city, we'll do kindness with you. And maybe they're basically trying to convince the person by saying, listen, eventually we're going to conquer the city. So you have two choices. Either you could not help us, and then it won't be good for you now or then, or you could help us, and then we'll do good for you. Pasachav hei. He doesn't, at least in, you know, the way the pasuk presents it, this person doesn't seem to hesitate at all. Vayar aim es mavo ha'ir. He shows them how they could enter into the city. Vayaku es ha'ir lefi charev. They're able to strike the city with the sword. Ve'es ha'ish ve'es kol mishpachto shilechu. And they're true to their word. They said they would do kindness. They said they would do chesed to the man. And it says, this man and his whole family, shilechu, they send out. And again, it's reminiscent of Rachav, in that Rachav wasn't only Rachav that was saved, it was Rachav's whole family. And so they save his family, and you wouldn't expect to keep hearing about him. Pasuk Chavav, vayelach ha'ish eretz achitim. This man, he left town, he went to the land of the Chitim, vayiven ir, he built a city, Vayikra Shema Luz. He called the name of the city Luz. Who Shema Arayamaza? That's the name of the city until today. So we know why he's calling the name Luz. That's the name that we had said where he comes from, Beit El. Beit El had once been called Luz. It's almost like he builds the new, right? Why is this place called New York? Why is it called New Rochelle? Right? There was a place, right? La Rochelle? How do you pronounce it?
Rochelle.
The La is just like the?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a place in France called Rochelle. They gave me a new Rochelle. So here it doesn't have, it's not Luz Chadasha, or Luz HaChadash, it's just Luz. He's extending the name. And the name is going on. Why are we told? So the Mefarshim explained that there's a concept here of, look at this man. What did he do? He was one of the inhabitants of Canaan, and he assisted in Klal Yisrael, in the tribe of Ephraim and Manasseh, in Beis Yosef, conquering Beis El. And he gets a legacy. His legacy is he got saved, his family got saved, and he was able to build a city, he was able to build a town. The name has some level of everlastingness, in that it lasted, you know, at least a couple of hundred years until Shmuel writes the Sefer. It almost shows what should have happened or what could have happened. The more there was assistance to help Klal Yisrael get to conquer Eretz Yisrael, it would be good for everyone. That, again, there's one, we believe that humbly, that there's one land in the whole world where Klal Yisrael is supposed to be, and it's divinely orchestrated as such. That's the first Rashi ala Torah, saying Hashem created the creation story to show that Hashem owns the world, and that when he wants to see fit that this nation should live in the land of Canaan, then they will. And when Klal Yisrael shall live there, they will. And that this man receives tons of, it seems, a great amount of reward for assisting in that effort. The Radak mentions an interesting medrash about this place of Luz, that Luz had, it was blessed with a certain amount of prosperity and a certain amount of everlastingness, in that death was not to be found in the city. Personal death, meaning people didn't die when they were in the city. When it says that when they were kind of elderly, they would be taken out of the city, that death had no place here. Sancheirev, the Medrash says, the king Sancheirev was not able to destroy this city of Luz. Nebuchadnezzar, later on in Jewish history was not able to destroy. It had a certain everlasting nature to it. And it happens to be that there is a bone in the back of one's top of the spine of the neck that Chazal refer to as the Luz bone, Lamed Vav Zion. And we're way out of my league of understanding. But the Gemara says that when we get to the time of Tchias HaMesim, so how are people going to come back to life? They're going to come back to life through this bone called the Luz bone. And there's another statement found in the Gemara that one of the ways to make sure that your Luz bone is properly nourished, I'm not making this up, is to eat Malav Malka. Is to make sure to eat Malav Malka, which now that it's getting... Malav Malka is, at least for New Yorkers, East Coast, it's very challenging in the summertime. Now that we're getting, you know, when Shabbos is, right, Mincha this past week was like 5:40. In 2 weeks when we change the clock, Shabbos Mincha is going to be like 4:15. So Shalashuddis becomes hard. Shalashuddis becomes hard. But Malav Malka is... So the Malav Malka, again, I don't fully understand it. It nourishes the Luz bone, Lamed Vav Zayin. And then the Lamed, this bone is going to be involved in Tchias HaMesim, which I don't understand. But now you see the connection. There was something about this place, and it comes from, the source of it seems to be from this man's chesed. A separate statement the Chazal seemed to make is that also Luz was one of the places where they dyed the tcheles. I'm not sure what the connection and the significance is. But so this was a successful conquest of Beis Yosef, again, of Menashe and Ephraim working together. Pasuk Chav Zayin, we shift into the negative. V'lo horish Menashe es Beis She'an ves Benoseha. Now we're just singling out Menashe, and we remind ourselves that the tribe of Menashe had land in two regions. They had land in the Eiver HaYarden, they had land in the Transjordan, and they also had, so that's why we talk about the 2.5 tribes that were in the Transjordan, Reuven, Gad, and Chatzis Shevet Menashe. And then you have Menashe, the portion of land that they receive in the land of Israel, and it was contiguous. It connected to each other over the Yarden. When you read the Psukim in the end of Sefer Bamidbar, so originally you only have Gad and Reuven asking, and all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, it seems like Chatzis Shevet Menashe. And so the Mefarshim explained that was actually Moshe Rabbeinu's idea, to divide Menashe into two. Why? Because Moshe Rabbeinu understood that there was going to be some level of tribes living almost among themselves, and that before there was a king, each tribe was going to kind of hunker down and take care of themselves. And that Moshe was nervous about Reuven and Gad being on the other side. And so he took another tribe, dividing them into two, because if there was a kind of a bridge between one tribe, between the land of Eretz Yisrael proper and the Eiver HaYarden, that would assist at some level of there being unity, of there being some type of link. So right now, when we're talking about Menashe not driving out, we're talking about Menashe's portion in the land of Israel proper. V'lo rish Menashe at Beit She'an ves Benoseha, Beit She'an. And it's Benoseha, which we may see, we'll see multiple times. Benoseha, I mean, it means, doesn't mean it's daughters, and it doesn't mean it's building. It means like the surrounding towns. That a lot of time you have, you know, we have very, very big cities. So you can, you know, you call it New York City, but then, you know, the areas right outside, people still say, oh, where do you live? You live in New York. They don't just mean New York State. But it extends out. So sometimes you have the name here. The name was Beit She'an. And then you have small places around it. They weren't able to conquer that. The Es Tanach Ves Benoseha, a place called Tanach, and it's villages around it. Ves Yoshve Dor, the inhabitants of a place called Dor Ves Benoseha, and it, the lands, the towns around it. Ves Yoshe V'Yavdalam Ves Benoseha, the inhabitants of Yilavam, Yivleam, and the towns around it. Ves Yoshe Megiddo Ves Benoseha, those inhabitants of Megiddo. So the list is quite long. Vayoel Haknani Losheves Baretz Hazos. Vayoel is an interesting language. Vayoel, the Metzudos Tzion defines it as he says, inyan ratzon, a willingness. At the same time that the Bnei Yisrael, and here we're talking about Menashe, at the same time that they're not successful to drive out, vayoel haknani l'sheves baretz, the Kananim are almost, they're insisting on staying in the land, which one could understand. One could definitely understand why they want, unfortunately, you needed war. You needed, or at least the threat of war, what Yehoshua had done for the majority, but this was part of the, what was left over. Pasuk Chavches, Vayhi, Ki Chazak Yisrael, Vayasem Esaknani Lamas. It was when Israel was strong, they imposed on the Kananim a mas. A mas is a tax. What is this? What is this pasuk coming to represent? That even for Menashe, that wasn't successful in conquering all of these places, one of the things that they kind of convinced themselves of was, when we have authority, we'll impose a tax on the local Kananim. And so there were periods of time where they were able to do that. It implies that perhaps there were times they're not, right? But if there were times that for whatever reason they did not have the upper hand, or they were not, in the language of the Navi, they were not chazak, well then maybe they wouldn't be paying the tax. And there's some level, right, if you take a look at the pasuk kind of divides itself into two, using the esnachta, which is always good to look at, right? The semi-pause, right? The first half of the pasuk is, Vayihi chazak Yisrael, Vayasem esaknani lamas. So they go ahead and they place a tax on them. The horish lo horishu. But they're not able to drive them out. Is it that they're not able to drive them out? Here it doesn't even use the word able. Here it just says, v'horish lohorishu, that they didn't. So they almost chose the tax. And you could say, from a financial perspective, maybe that's better, right? We'll be able to sustain ourselves. We'll be getting this tribute, this tax will come in. It'll be revenue, constant flow. You're right, maybe from a financial perspective. But they weren't supposed to look at it from a financial perspective. Eretz Yisrael in general is a place that isn't always supposed to be looked at from a financial perspective. We have that, right? If this right, we just had Parshas Vayera, where the city of Sodom is destroyed. One of the reasons why Lot chose to move to Sodom is because the land was much more fertile. It was much more of you didn't need to have this Eretz Yisrael classic type of lifestyle where you need the rain. And that's why when it makes the language is that he went mikedem, he went to the east. And Rashi quotes from Chazal, he went mikadmonu shel olam. He went from the original one of the world, right? One of the ways that we refer to Hashem. He went from the kadmonu shel olam. It was a religious decision to leave Avram. To go to Sodom was a religious, not to put his faith, not to put his trust in Hashem, that were you in Eretz Yisrael, if it rains, you do fine. If it doesn't rain, it's trouble. And he wanted away from that. Rabbi Menachem Liebtag explains that if you look at the unculus, so Avram gave a deal to Lot. He said, either you go to the right and I'll go to the left, or you go to the left and I'll go to the right. So when we translate the words, it uses the word yamin and small. So we translate it as right and left. And therefore, it almost sounds like, okay, so Avram was in Eretz Yisrael proper, and this might look backwards for people on Zoom. Lot went to the right. If you look at the Targum, actually explains that right and left was being used as north and south. Meaning, Avram's intention was, Lot, of course you're going to stay in the land of Canaan, which is the future Eretz Yisrael. Of course you're going to stay in this more religiously significant part of the world. Either you go to the north, I'll go to the south. You go to the north, meaning, but you're going to stay here. And Lot, chose differently. And that, or Elipta explains, that may have been the motivation for Chazal to say he didn't just go east. He went mikadmono shel olam. He was making a decision not to be stuck in the financial peril sometimes of living in the land of Israel. But that's not the perspective that you're supposed to have. So the inhabitants here, in the case of Menashe, and we may see it with some of the others, they should not have put their faith in the mas, in the tax, but rather they should have driven them out because that was the mission. But that was the mission from Hashem. Pasuk Chaf Tes, the Ephraim lo horish as haknani hayoshev bagazer. So Ephraim, again, this is being mentioned together. It's in the same paragraph. We're grouping them together because we heard there about their success together. They were Beis Yosef when they had a success. Here, Ephraim, who was the other member, right, the other son of Yosef, Ephraim also didn't drive out the Kanani HaYoshev BaGezer that lived in Gezer. There still is a region in Eretz Yisrael. There's a town called Gezer. Only the most significant thing that I personally know about Gezer, it's one of the only places in Israel you can play baseball. They have a baseball field. They took a field almost like the Field of Dreams. They plowed over just a field and it has lights. I think maybe the community in Kansas City like donated it. Kansas, like maybe that's like their sister city. And we used to go from camp in Israel because where American kids are going to play baseball? In Gezer you can play baseball. But I don't know if it's this, you know, I most likely it is the same. Vayeshev Aknani Bekirbo Begezer. And so the Kananim dwelt Bekirbo. Bekirbo, the art scroll translates it, in their midst, or Karov, close to them, Begezer. So again, it's two levels. It's on the one hand, you're not driving them out. On the other hand, they're now your close neighbor. Pasuk Lamed. Zvulun Loharishas Yosve Kitron. We move on to Zvulun. The tribe of Zvulun did not get rid of the Yoshve Kitron, the inhabitants of Kitron, Ves Yoshve Nahalol, and the inhabitants of Nahalol, Vayeshev Aknani Bikirbo, Vayulamas. So now we hear it with Zvulun again, that the Kananim lived in their midst, Vayulamas, but they gave a tax. They gave a tax, and it's almost, again, it's reminding us that the tribes, and here we're talking about Zvulun, he satisfied himself with receiving a tax instead of doing the job that was supposed to be done. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Asher Lohorish as Yosve Akko. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of the city of Akko, the port city of Akko. Ves Yosve Tzidon and Tzidon, which the Tzidon is towards the north. I think Tzidon would be what we consider to be today Lebanon, Sidon. But according to the map of Eretz Yisrael proper, as Yoshua was given, this fell into the lands of Asher. The Es Achlov, the Es Achziv, Es Chalba, the Es Afik, the Es Rehov, a whole list of places, again, that he did not drive out. Vayeshev HaAsheri, Bekerev HaKnani, Yoshve HaAretz. And the tribe of Asher lived amongst the Knanim, the inhabitants of the land. And maybe you would even say that this is a even stronger language. This almost makes, right, the previous Pesukim made it out like, okay, they weren't able to drive out some of the people, some of the locals, and the locals live among them. Here, it's almost sounding like it's basically the place of the, right, in the land of Asher, who are the natural inhabitants are the Knanim, and Asher lives among them. Kilo Harishu, because he didn't drive them out. Does that mean that we should take from the language that the numbers were actually greater? I'm not sure, but it does hint to impact. What was the impact that was being made that was being made upon the Bnei Asher? Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Naftali lo horish es Yosve beis Shemesh, ves Yosve beis Anos. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beis Shemesh, Beis Yoshve Beis Anos, and the inhabitants of Beis Anos. Vayeshev Bekerev HaKnani Yoshve Aretz. They lived among the Kenanim, the inhabitants of the land. Beis Yoshve Beis Shemesh Beis Anos Hayulam Lamas, but they did pay the tax. Obviously, when we hear the name Beit Shemesh, so we think of today's Beit Shemesh. I think today's Beit Shemesh, the one that exists today, is people assume it's in the lands of Yehuda, based on how things are drawn. So I don't know, you know, there could have been another place. The name Beit Shemesh is not such a Jewish name, because to call something after the sun, and again, these names exist, as we see here, the name Beit Shemesh exists when Canaan is Canaan. It's an idolatrous type of source of the name. It's very hot in Beit Shemesh, so it makes sense that if you are an idolatrous type of system, so normally it seems like you maybe believe in many gods, but you gravitate towards the god that seems to be most powerful. So the people that live on the coast, they gravitate towards a water god. The people that live where it's hot, they gravitate towards a sun god, and that may be the origins of the name Beit Shemesh, but this is most likely a different place of Beit Shemesh, I think. But that would be a question. You know, you can mark down your questions for when you get to go to Israel and you're meeting with some tour guide. What's the connection between the Beit Shemesh that Naphtali did not drive out and the modern day city of Beit Shemesh? And not to mention the Beit Shemesh that gets mentioned in Sefer, at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Is it all the same place? Are there different places? So you'll have that question. Pasuk Lamed Dalid. Vayilchatsu ha-mori es b'nei Dun ha-hara. We move on to Dun. And the Amorim were able to, they put the pressure on the children of Dun ha-hara to go up a mountain. Kilo nesano laredes la'emek. They didn't let them descend into the valley, which makes it sound like for Dun was maybe even had, they forget about, they didn't have the upper hand. It sounds like they maybe even were had the Amorim were controlling where they could be. Pasuk Lamed Hey, Vayoel ha'amori l'sheves b'har cheres. The Amorim were, they had that ratzon, they had their determination to live in Har Cheres, uva Ayalon, uva Shalavim, in Ayalon and Shalavim, which is close to where those places are today. Vatechbad Yad Beis Yosef, and here, actually to answer your question, the household of Yosef came to help out. Vayulamas, and then they were able to impose a tax. Meaning Dun was in trouble, and Beis Yosef came to help them out. Last pasuk in the perek, Ugvul ha'amori mimale akbarim. The boundary for the Amorim was from Male Akbarim, me'asel v'mala, from the rock and upward, which again would definitely have significance for the people who lived at the time or when Shmuel is writing this. So we conclude the perek, which again has significance not because we're concluding a perek. We're concluding the list of the tribes in terms of, you know, kind of taking attendance of who did not conquer what they were supposed to conquer. And what's fascinating is to think about which tribe wasn't mentioned. So we said we were going to ask the question. So we kept track. Which tribe, right? So there's some easy ones that weren't mentioned. So what's an easy one that wasn't mentioned? So Reuven and Gad were not mentioned. Reuven and Gad are not mentioned, and that's understandable. Reuven and Gad are not mentioned because they're no longer present. They've gone home. Yehoshua, after the 14 years, after the 7 years of dividing the land, of conquering the land, and the 7 years of dividing land, Reuven and Gad go home to Eivar Yarden. They're in the Transjordan. That was fully conquered. That was fully conquered by Moshe Rabbeinu and Kal Yisrael's force at that time. So Reuven and Gad, it makes good sense while they're not mentioned. Levi is not mentioned, but also makes good sense because Levi wasn't a conquering tribe. Levi got their 42 cities with the 6 Ari Miklat. They got what they got, and they're not meant to fight. There's one other tribe that's not mentioned, which this was actually where I got the good answer from the Big Deshesh. And it's the tribe of Yisachar. So you're right, you don't have to take my word for it. You could glance down. I actually, when I was preparing last week, I like did a double take because I thought to myself, I'm like, was everybody mentioned here? And I actually, I sat down with a pen and paper and I wrote down and I kept, and I, Yisachar is not mentioned. And the question is why? Why is it almost makes it sound like Yisachar was fully successful. Why, if Yisachar also had part of their land that they did not conquer, why would they be left out off the list? And then, you know, what was it about Yisachar that they saw fit to conquer their entire land? So I didn't see an answer in any of the, or I didn't even see it brought up in any of the regular places. And the thought that I had, which is very similar to what Rabbi Bachhofer mentioned, is we know Yisachar represents the study of Torah. That there's the famous, this partnership between Yisachar and Zevulun, that Yisachar and Zevulun, they are a unit together because they were born kind of, they were the second set of children that Leah had, right? We'll get there in a few weeks. But Leah has four children, one after the other. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, it's all there as a unit. And then she stops giving birth. And to a certain extent, she maybe even believed that she had stopped giving birth. That was it, because she did the math, and then you know that maybe originally she's supposed to have six and Rachel's supposed to have six, but then there's Bilhah and Zilpah in the picture, so maybe it's really four. So if you take 12, and she knew about the 12 tribes, so 12 divided by 4 is 3. So Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, it makes sense, right? Yehuda is famously called Yehuda. She says, "Hapam odes Hashem." Now I'm going to thank Hashem. What do you mean now? She realized that she was already going to contribute more than her fair share to producing the tribes because she had four. She then stops having children, and it's only a little bit later that she has Yisachar and Zevulun. And so from childhood, Yisachar and Zevulun are linked together. Chazal understand that they had a greater link, that Zevulun and Yisachar entered into some type of partnership where Zevulun, who were seafarers, they would support, right? And that's why they would do the business, they would do the pragmatia, they would support Yisachar, who would be learning. And the Gemara makes mention how that there were 200 heads of the Sanhedrin that came from the tribe of Yisachar. That Yisachar had this, at least up until, you know, you're talking about, we know it doesn't last forever, because the tribe of Yisachar ends up they're part of the 10 tribes, and they don't remain. It's not like Yisachar joins in with Yehuda. Yisachar is, while there may have been individuals from Yisachar, just like all the other tribes, that made their way into the southern kingdom, either as in the years before Sancheiriv went ahead and exiled the 10 tribes, or the Gemara talks about how Yirmiyah Hanavi went out into the wild, wild west, and he was able to save some of the tribes. But again, he saved such small number that they didn't come back and retain their tribal identity. They became Yehudim. They became members of the southern kingdom, and then known to be Jews. So eventually Yisachar goes the way of his brothers. But right now, Yisachar represents Torah, and it was maybe either you could really say it in both ways. Either you could say it's the merit of all the Torah allowed them to make the right decision and conquer all of their land, or no, maybe you just say it's the value. I mean, the Torah's values are, right, we like to believe, right, sometimes I have to try to stress this, not in shul, but, you know, to high school students, the Torah is supposed to change you. The Torah is supposed to make an impact on you. It's not supposed to be that you learn the Torah and you're the same person. You're supposed to, right, derachecha darchei noam, the ways of the Torah are pleasant. It's supposed to make you into a better person. We'd like to believe that. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work. But the Torah made you suffer into the type of people that said, wait, Hashem wants us to conquer all our land. We're going to conquer all our land. In the footnote, Rabbi Bachhofer quotes from, I don't know who he's quoting. He just says Chacham Echad. So he's not saying who it is. And I don't fully understand it, but I'll share it with you because it's definitely fascinating. We know, we have to imagine that the union between Yaakov and all of his wives was always proper with the proper intention. There was something special about Yisachar, and when Leah went ahead, and because she had made the trade with Rachel, right, and she kind of bought that night from Rachel to spend with Yaakov, and it was done according to Chazal in a very pure type of fashion, and there was an element of purity to the physical relationship, which then produced Yisachar. It only then makes good sense that Yisachar would have the sensitivity. That model of purity in relationship between men and women, or even husband and wife, that was lacking in Canaan. When the Torah wants to say what we shouldn't do, it tells us not to act like the way of Canaan. Unfortunately, there was an inherent immorality to the land of Canaan at that time. And so Yisachar, of all the tribes, is perhaps most sensitive to that. And so they saw fit to conquer their land. And again, we don't hear that they conquer all their land, but it's really glaring. It's really glaring that they're left off the list. Every other tribe, right? Reuben, Gad, and Levi, it makes good sense why they're left off the list. But why would Yisachar be left off? So again, this is what Rabbi Bachhofer said. This is a thought that came across my mind. Obviously, if you find something else, you can go ahead and share it with us. I think we'll stop here because we finished the parak and it's like 2 minutes to the time. So Bez Hashem, next time we will continue with parak days. God willing.